Boy, this is a intimidating crowd. I'm not going to lie to you. A year or so ago, I got to go speak in England, and they took me to Oxford University, you know, an intimidating place. And I went in there, and they keep you in the back room before, and they talked about what a big deal it is to speak there, and then, you know, polished wood and old stones, older than our country. And right before you go in to talk, they take you by this photograph, and they've got a photograph of Teddy Roosevelt speaking exactly where I was about to speak. And the message is, you are not Teddy Roosevelt. I got it. So I went in there, and I was nervous to begin with. And as soon as I started talking, I looked right in front of me, and a person fell dead asleep. I mean, my first sentence. And so you try to avoid eye contact. You look here, you look there, you look around, but you keep looking back to see if maybe they've woken up. And of course, she never did. That was my wife. So that she kind of keeps me centered on this. I want to thank you for letting me be here today. And I hope people tell you this. I want to thank you for what you do. One of the things I believe very strongly is this country is what we all do. It's what we all make. It's what we all grow. It's what we're about. And I want to thank you for making it very, very special. Now, one of the things that I've become very passionate about is what are we going to do to deal with the future? How are we going to deal because things are different in many ways than they've been before? There's a quote that I really like that sort of brings me down to earth on this, and it came from H.G. Wells. Remember, wrote many science fiction stories, and he said, we're either going to adapt for the future or we're going to pay a very serious price, and all of us in one way or another have lived with that. And so what I wanted to talk about tonight was something that I call cross-lead, and it's a way of looking at the future and a way of dealing, but it's about adapting organically. It's about learning to change as the environment demands that you do that. And we'll take a look at what I mean. And let's start by looking at an event that happened. In 1978, a United Airlines DC-8 took off from New York City and it flew to Denver. And in Denver, it took on more fuel, changed passengers at 2:47 in the afternoon. That aircraft took off again to fly to Portland, Oregon. Now, it was a good airplane. It was only 10 years old and had been recently overhauled. That's prime of life for that kind of airplane. The pilot was very experienced, 27,000 hours, almost 8,000 hours in that particular kind of airframe, and they were carrying 46,700 pounds of fuel. Now, a DC-8 burns 13,000 pounds of fuel an hour, so they had enough for their flight to Portland and then some, plenty of reserve. So they took off, and about 5 in the afternoon, they approached Portland Airport. They could see the airport outside. They got into the airspace, and they went through all the procedures to prepare to land. As they did that, they got a warning light, and it said that one of the landing gear had a problem, and it may not be locked down in position. Now, that doesn't mean the aircraft is going to crash and you're going to have loss of life, but it is something they have to deal with. So they started going through how to deal with that particular problem. They went through lists of things. They prepared the passengers. They even went so far as to move some books that were up in the cockpit so that they wouldn't jostle around if they had a rough landing. Near Portland, about 6:15 that evening, still in the airspace, the aircraft ran out of fuel and crashed. Nothing else mechanically wrong. They ran out of fuel after an hour and 15 minutes of boring holes in the sky. 8 passengers and 2 crew members tragically lost their lives. So what happened? Of course, they investigated it, and they came out with a fascinating conclusion. They said the fact that we've got more modern airplanes, more capable systems, more warning systems, automatic pilot, etc., the plane is no longer the problem. The problem lies with people. And the investigation came out with some interesting things. It said technology, in fact, had increased rather than reduced the challenge that crews face. And you say, well, how's that possible? But then think about it. This is a cockpit of a World War I fighter airplane, a Fokker D-7. It's pretty straightforward. This is an F-15 Strike Eagle. And think of the information that a pilot, a single pilot in this case, has to deal with. He's got a lot of things to help him or her, but he's also got a lot of things to contend and digest. So technology had increased rather than reduced the challenge, and that particular crew was so worried about mitigating the problem with the landing gear that they didn't adapt to an entirely different situation that they were in. In fact, the flight engineer kept saying, hey, we've got a fuel problem, right until the moment that they ran out. And they didn't function as a team. At the end of the day, in a complex environment, they failed to adapt. And you think about that's what we face every day, the requirement to adapt.